The film 42 has sparked a lot of buzz about Jackie Robinson. I'm Bill Anderson, and just ahead on Central Standard, Robinson's days in Kansas City as a member of the Negro League's Monarch Baseball Club. He played here a couple of seasons before he demolished the Major League color barrier in Brooklyn. Joining us will be the curator at the Negro Leagues Museum, the co-writer of a play about Robinson's days in Kansas City, and one of the actors from the stage performance. We want your phone calls, and feel free to leave us a comment or question on Facebook. It's Central Standard, right after the news. Let's go back for a moment to the spring of 1947. A gallon of gas cost 15 cents. The average cost of a new home was $6,600. Television was a fledgling medium in the U.S. World War II was over and oppressive regimes were defeated. But that's not to say all was rosy. In the States, African Americans were segregated from mainstream American life, often treated with hostility and relegated to second-class citizenship. African Americans fought for the freedoms of others in World War II, but operated in a segregated military. This is Central Standard. I'm Bill Anderson, and that was the backdrop for a young African American baseball player by the name of Jackie Robinson, who took the field in April of 47 as a member of the Brooklyn Dodgers. He was the player chosen to break the color barrier of Major League Baseball. Who was this guy beyond a gifted four-sport athlete? Well, we're going to talk about it this hour, and we're going to talk about some exciting things happening in Kansas City this week. Ricardo Kahn co-wrote Kansas City Swing, which is being performed by UMKC Theater starting tomorrow. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Bill.
It's the story begins as Satchel Paige and the All-Stars are preparing to play the Bob Feller All-Stars as part of a Negro League's barnstorming showdown. Now, across the state, the St. Louis Cardinals are going against Jackie Robinson and the Brooklyn Dodgers. Both are historic events, but only one game is truly remembered. So let's start there, and let's start with you, Ricardo.
Yes, it's good morning to you, first
good
of all.
Good morning.
But it actually is wonderful that you started off with Jackie Robinson, because in that year, I think all of America was at a changing point, a turning point in their lives, where integration was just about to start in many ways, and baseball being such an American pastime represented that change and the dreams and the hopes of people. But baseball and jazz and Kansas City is such an important part of this play.
You may have just answered my next question. You've produced a performance about Paul Robeson. You helped produce the Tony-nominated It Ain't Nothing But the Blues. And among many other accomplishments, you wrote a Broadway tribute to August Wilson.
Yes.
So why did you take on this project as a co-writer and as a director?
Sure. Well, first of all, I'm a visiting professor at the University of Missouri here, and my job is to create a new play every 2 years. The first one I did was about Quindaro, and after that, Train to 2010 took place in South Africa on a train on the way to the World Cup, so it was a contemporary piece. But Kansas City and its history has always been so rich, and it's become an important thing for me just to be able to tell the stories that normally are not written in the history books. This is one, baseball and jazz in Kansas City.
Dr. Raymond Doswell is head curator at the Negro Leagues Museum. He was an advisor to Ricardo as he wrote the play. Welcome, Raymond.
Oh, good to be here.
Good to have you back at KCUR. So did he get it right? did he follow your advice?
Oh, I think they did a great job, and they give me and the museum a little too much credit, I think, for assistance. Where we were most helpful was trying to get the look and the feel of the play right. Their team did a great job with the look of the uniforms and, of course, of the dress, and just trying to contextualize what was happening both in baseball and historically for the time period. And I always comment on whenever I see the performers is the energy that they have and they bring to the project. And it really just gets me all energized about the history because, it's a glimpse into the past and it makes it real for me.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because there is not a Jackie Robinson character, correct?
Well, not embodied in an actor, as a character in the play, he's very much alive there.
Obviously that was a deliberate a move on your part.
Yes, in order to focus on Satchel Paige and Buck O'Neill, of course, here in Kansas City, and younger characters in the play, black and white, who aspire to be the best that they could be in the major leagues.
Janae Mitchell is with us. She's an actor in the performance, Kansas City Swing. By the way, it starts tomorrow night.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and there's also a performance tonight.
Oh, there is. I didn't realize that.
But the opening is tomorrow. Yes,
okay.
We've been in previewing to make sure that we get it right, but the opening is tomorrow night, and it only runs until,
Sunday.
Sunday.
Okay.
Sunday in the afternoon. But, 7:30 every evening.
And Janae Mitchell plays Mrs. Hopkins, who runs a boarding house in the 18th and Vine District, right?
Yes, she does indeed.
Well, tell us a little bit about your character and how she fits in 1947 Kansas City.
Well, Mrs. Hopkins, I believe, stands for the woman of the time.
Uh-huh.
She is very much, we refer to as Negro royalty in the show, and she's a mother, she's a lover of these men, a lover of these games, music, the culture. She is in love with Kansas City at this time.
When you say Negro royalty, I'm not sure I understand what you mean, Janae.
She's a high-class woman.
Okay.
As I like to put it. She loves the finer things in life, having more than what people expect a black woman of that time to have. Because she has a lot of control over her life. She runs things. She does not settle for anything below her station.
She's strong. She's smart.
Yes.
She has life figured out pretty much.
She's got a lot figured out, but things changing, the color lines being erased or throwing curveballs at her that she didn't expect to happen.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment because I find that really incredibly fascinating. She stood to lose from integration in some respects as a business person. Can you talk to that?
It's one of those conflicting things of you want to have what everyone else is having and you want the playing field to be equal, but in order to get what you want, sometimes you have to give up a little bit. So in terms of like losing business and everything, she's sacrificing some of what she worked for in order to give her daughter a better life and to have everyone else rise above.
I was just going to say,
in one of those meetings where I first met Dr. Doswell, and I was out waiting for my meeting, there was a magazine on the table. And in the magazine, there was a listing and a map of all of these black-owned businesses and neighborhoods in that area, not just 18th and Vine, but for blocks and blocks, miles and miles of black-owned businesses. And I think we forget that at one time prior to integration, there were a lot of black-owned businesses.
Right.
When the doors opened, we lost a lot.
Yeah.
Certainly we gained by the civil rights movement and integration, but one of the things that we have to remember is that prior to integration, there was a time when we owned our own businesses. It might have been because of force that we had to, but the bottom line is I'm so proud of that particular time, and Mrs. Hopkins represents that that era.
And that would have been the landscape, the economic backdrop across the nation, right, in major American cities.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Preceded by the Jewish people when they were forced to have their own businesses only, and the Irish and the Italian, and it just goes on and on. But at that time, it was us. We were forced to have our own businesses and never thought. You know, when I was a kid, we went to the YMCA. It was the black YMCA, and we knew there was a white YMCA, and this was in Camden, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
But we never thought of it as the black Y. We never thought of it as lesser than. We always thought of it as ours.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. So would have members of the Kansas City Monarchs stayed with Mrs. Hopkins in 1947 And maybe even in 1945 when Jackie Robinson was playing here?
Yeah, they would have. She is fictional, but
yeah,
I believe in my own performance of it, everyone came through, of course.
Right.
Every musician, writer, player, the who's who was always in the house.
Yeah. Now, you have quite a history as an actor. And what is it that attracted you to Kansas City Swing? What makes this so special for you?
Well, it actually goes back to, I'm a second-year MFA actor in the UMKC theater program.
Mm-hmm.
And during the recruitment process, I met Ricardo in Chicago, along with Theodore Sweats. And they told me about the project, and it just sounded too good to be true. I actually cried upon hearing about the project because I wanted to be a part of it so badly. So it just, the opportunity to work on a new play and to work in an area with other Black actors and mm-hmm. just so many people who look like me and have my experience, mm-hmm. to be able to indulge that for the first time sounded just marvelous.
Mm-hmm. Are you a baseball fan?
I'm actually not.
Okay, that's all right.
It's a dangerous thing to say in Kansas City, I know.
Especially when I think we still have the Royals in first place. Now, you don't like baseball, but did you have an awareness of the significance of a person like Jackie Robinson?
Oh, yeah.
Going into this play.
Okay. Yeah,
all right.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay. Raymond, I want to talk to you just a little bit to get a little background about Jackie and the time he spent as a Kansas City Monarch, which was, what, one season, right?
Primarily one season, 1945.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, Robinson he was born in Georgia, grew up in Pasadena, California, was experienced in integrated environments from his youth, not always positive. He used to run around with a little bit of a integrated gang, he would call it, the
right.
Pepper Street Gang,
yeah.
as a child, and they got into a number of scrapes, but he came from an athletic family. His brother in particular was an Olympian. And they were very competitive from the standpoint of both being athletes. The brother would come along, set a lot of both regional and national records in California. Jackie would come along and break his records. He played track and field. He was a basketball player, was a football player, spent a couple of years at UCLA, was a letterman in football. It was a bit of a minor celebrity of sorts. People remembered that he performed in the Rose Bowl as a football player, but went to the military and served his country, even though he was in a number of segregated situations, and famously was court-martialed in Texas for not moving to the back of the bus when ordered to. I should say, though, before that, the regional tie before that was that he was at Fort Riley, was stationed at Fort Riley, briefly as well. But once he left the military, needed a job and found the Monarchs as an opportunity in professional baseball for just about any athlete, Black or white, but especially for African-American athletes, was one of the few opportunities that paid handsomely enough for you to make a decent living. And he wanted to get married to his fiancée, Rachel, and then really needed some resources. So he came to Kansas City. Having been in those integrated situations in the West, the segregation of baseball was not his cup of tea. He had a number of things to say negatively about his experience in the Negro Leagues, but he did perform well as an infielder for the Kansas City Monarchs. Was a great hitter, did some great things in the field, and was ultimately recruited by the Brooklyn Dodgers when Branch Rickey decided that he was going to make the move to try to find an African-American ball player. So 1945, he was a Negro League All-Star in 1945. The Kansas City Monarchs, as historian Aaron Stiley recently did a program at the museum, noted that the Monarchs this wasn't the greatest Monarchs team because they had suffered, too, from a number of players who had gone on to the war. Particularly Buck O'Neill was among those players who left the Monarchs to go and serve their country. So it was not the best Monarchs team, but he performed very well. And, of course, was discovered and then was signed at the end of 1945, and then the rest is history.
Let's back up a little bit. He was court-martialed, but I think this speaks to his character. He fought that court-martial.
Yes, he famously fought the court martial, and the whole movie has been made about it. The court martial, Jackie Robinson, which appeared in 1990. A quick trivia note: the Jackie Robinson story, which appeared in 1950, was a biopic film about him and starred him, and his wife in the film was the great actress Ruby Dee. In a 1990 film, The Court Martial, Jackie Robinson, which was a made-for-television film, his mother, Maylee Robinson, was played by the great actress Ruby Dee. So it comes full circle.
Yeah.
But in The Court Martial, yes, he was ordered to move to the back of the bus. He was speaking with the wife of a friend, and she happened to be a fair-skinned woman, and she was sitting near the middle front of the bus. And so when he got on the bus, he saw her. He struck up a conversation. The bus driver said, "Why is he talking to this white woman?" And ordered him to move to the back of the bus. The driver's civilian. He's a lieutenant in the Army. And he refused. And once he got to the base, there was a rhubarb with the MPs. And then so he was brought up on charges. He did fight the charges and was exonerated, but was honorably discharged.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR, streaming live at kcur.org. I'm Bill Anderson. Our guest, Ricardo Kahn, he co-wrote, he directs Kansas City Swing. We just heard from Dr. Raymond Doswell. He's the curator, the head curator at the Negro Leagues Museum, and was an advisor to Ricardo as he wrote the play. And Janae Mitchell is here. She's an actor in the play, Kansas City Swing. Kansas City, what moment in Negro League baseball history speaks to you? We'd like you to join the conversation by telephone, 816-235-2888, 235-2888, or email the show, centralstandard@kcur.org. Let's go back to the play for a minute. Take us, where do we start? And kind of tell us a little bit more about Kansas City beyond just being a segregated place at that time.
Absolutely. We actually start on the ball field in Kansas City. The Bob Feller All-Stars, and Bob Feller, of course, was the greatest pitcher of the time in the major leagues.
Right.
Playing Satchel Paige, who was the greatest pitcher, I think, of all times.
Yes.
But,
yeah.
But certainly in the Negro Leagues. And so the
a humble guy.
Not quite humble.
I know.
He was a poet. He was he loved music. He loved
Some animated language, Ricardo.
He had some animated language. But Satchel Paige was a character, a wonderful character and perfect to put in this play. But the two all-star teams are about to play each other, and that's how we start.
Okay.
Now, there is a storm brewing, and I will leave it up to the audience when they come to see whether or not they play the game. But the point is that, well, I could tell you that they do end up all having to go together to stay the night in the boarding house, Mrs. Hopkins' boarding house. And it's during that time that the players, black and white, get to know each other and really get to understand each other in a way that they normally might not have on the ball field.
Janae, do you think this was a logical spot to start the play?
I think so.
Yeah.
I believe so. It's a baseball play that's also domestic, and it makes sense. Just take it down and strip it down to the people. Let the people speak.
I think we're going to play a short scene from Kansas City Swing. This is audio that Julie Deneche, one of our contributors, one of our arts contributors at KCUR, provided for us. And I think it'll kind of set the stage for more conversation about Kansas City Swing and the backdrop and the history of Jackie Robinson. Let's listen.
How about low now? Keep watching, you might learn something.
Oh, yeah.
Want to see my bat dodging? Yeah. My b-ball. What about my midnight rider? Not to be confused with my midnight creeper. My jump ball. My Tom Little and Law. My whipsy dipsy do. My nothing ball. Oh my. Hesitation pitch.
My Midnight Creeper, yes. My Wixie Dixie Doo.
Yes.
Oh, that's great. Of course, that was Satchel Paige.
Yes.
Played by?
Rob Karma Robinson.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Oh, what a wonderful scene.
Yes, it's a great scene because he was a showman. Satchel Paige was such a showman, but incredibly talented and a gifted accurate pitcher, a fast pitcher, but he understood the game and that baseball was not just about what was on the field, but also giving the crowd what they want without losing his personal or professional integrity.
Uh-huh. And he was playing catch with Buck O'Neill.
Yes.
John Buck O'Neill.
Yes, they were good friends.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Raymond, that could have happened, right?
It certainly could have happened. And Paige was known, as noted, very charismatic. Certainly was one of the most popular black men in the country at the time. Had done a number of magazine features. Played in New York, played in Kansas City, played in Pittsburgh, played in Latin America. His athletic prowess and his age and longevity were something to marvel upon, but at the same time, he was a very talented athlete and a smart athlete. Knew how to market himself, certainly took a lot of risk, but was someone who was well respected and thought of as a true superstar in the black community.
Little side note, didn't he actually pitch for the Royals when he was in his, 40s or 50s?
Oh, not the Royals, but the Kansas City A's.
The Kansas City A's, excuse me.
And he may have been in his 50s. There's always a question about his age. Although the family says he was born in 1906,
okay,
for sure. Yes, he pitched with the A's and pitched some shutout baseball against the Boston Red Sox.
And that was just as out of respect, right? I mean, his career was more or less over at that point?
Well, he had actually been out of the game for a number of years. Uh-huh. One of the reasons, let's keep in mind, this is Charlie Finley, who was the owner of the A's, who in his own right was a character.
Oh, yeah.
And he's loved and hated, mostly hated here in Kansas City,
yeah.
for moving the A's out. But at the same time, he was trying to do some innovative things. Paige would have been someone that would have been a gate attraction, and people knew of him and knew of him. At the same time, giving him an opportunity to play also helped him build up service time to earn a Major League Baseball pension.
Mm-hmm. Ricardo, we talked about the fact that there is no one who plays the character on stage of Jackie Robinson, yet there are constant references to him. Was he well-liked by his peers on the Monarchs?
Jackie Robinson?
Yeah.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
I think people looked up to him in a great way. In order for us to understand the time in history the play is set in, we have to establish a level of tension. And certainly the fact that most of the crowds are paying more attention to Jackie Robinson playing than the game that's being played here in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Sets up the major conflict of the play, which is, as Janae was saying, integration is something we fought for. It's something we dreamed of, all of us. But then you have to also be careful what you ask for, because
right.
if it comes, there will be a price. And we don't know what that price is when the play is first starting. But what we do know is that something is starting, something is happening. And Jackie Robinson on the radio, the sports announcer, is bringing us the game that is being played at the same time they're trying to play theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what sets up our tension and the question as to whether or not there will be Negro Leagues in the baseball in the future.
Well, speaking of, Raymond, how much longer did the Negro Leagues last?
It's interesting. Robinson appears in 1947, and there are actually four other ballplayers who appear in 47 as well. During that year. But it takes between 1947 and 1959 before every major league team integrates with an African-American or Latino player on their starting lineups. So it was a slow process. Robinson actually plays only till about 1956, so he doesn't even see full integration at that point. So it was a slow process. A lot of feelings and attitudes still kept African-Americans and Afro-Latinos out of the major leagues. in spite of the fact that the Dodgers were having success not only with Robinson but with Roy Campanella and many other players, the Cleveland Indians the next year go to the World Series with Satchel Paige and Larry Doby, it still takes a long time. But in that time period, you see the slow decline of the Negro Leagues, and by 1960, they're effectively out of business.
Well, Larry Doby, you mentioned him. He became a Major League Baseball player only weeks after Mr. Robinson.
That's right. Robinson was April. Doby was in July.
Okay. And then Roy Campanella came soon after also, right?
He was in 1948, along with Satchel Paige with the Cleveland Indians. And, of course, Campanella would become MVP three times. And during that period, the 47 to 59, African-American players are raking in MVP awards, Rookie of the Year awards. They start to win the pitching awards. Their teams are winning, going to the postseason. And most of the teams in the National League are the ones who are getting the players. They begin to dominate the All-Star game. And it opened eyes for not only for baseball, but opened eyes for white fans who are going to the ball game and starting to see that these guys can compete, and begin to see not only that, their black neighbors are coming out to the game, starting to interact more. And that starts to get the ball rolling more for integration. And again, we're still, again, the beginning of this is still almost a decade before the bus boycotts in the South and all the other activity that happens after that.
So there wasn't exactly a lot of harmony, but I have to say this. I remember seeing, I swear to God, I saw Roy Campanella on an episode of Lassie.
I saw Satchel Paige. I mean, I didn't see it, but I saw a clip of him on What's My Line.
Yes, really? There's a wonderful clip of him on What's My Line, and players like that begin to become part of the conscience of America. They're becoming celebrities, they're becoming superstars, they're becoming people that you can look up to and maybe even name your children after when they were not, and they're still in some places, they're not allowed to go to different restaurants and go to different places. I think Willie Mays, when he came along, really was a player that really got everyone excited. I know in New York a lot of folks love Jackie Robinson, but Willie Mays and those players that came after were really the ones who really set the stage for white America to embrace black players.
We're talking about the UMKC theater production, Kansas City Swing, and we're also talking, of course, about the late, great Jackie Robinson, who broke the color barrier in baseball in 1947, and that's the setting for this play, and we're going to talk more about it coming up in the next half hour, and we've got some clips, including some music from a guy who made his acting debut in Kansas City Swing, the legendary Grammy nominee Bobby Watson. It's Central Standard. I'm Bill Anderson. This is KCUR. Oh, blow, baby, blow. I wasn't supposed to let it go that long. I couldn't help it. Oh, my gosh.
I'm so glad you did.
Oh, Bobby Watson, sax man from Kansas City, Kansas, and works over at the Conservatory of Music at UMKC. What an incredible artist performing on Kansas City Swing. He made his acting debut. He doesn't really acknowledge that he was acting, but he was on stage performing or will be all week on Kansas City Swing, Ricardo.
Not only is he playing the sax, but he of course composed the original musical score for this. But he is on stage. He plays the jazz man, and he's the one who really brings the story to us. So He starts the play off, he ends it, and he weaves his way through.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, that was really hot. That's Ricardo Kahn. He co-wrote Kansas City Swing. He's the director of Kansas City Swing as well. Janae Mitchell is an actor in the play, and I saw you kind of tapping your feet and bopping to that tune.
It's impossible not to.
Yeah.
I had to ask for permission to. I was like, can I actually hear the music in character?
Okay.
I was like, okay, I don't have to fight it. I get to indulge the fact that I'm on stage with Bobby Watson while he just goes to town. I'm happy.
And in a few minutes, we're going to have Bobby reflect on his experience with Kansas City Swing. But Janae, I want to ask you, Janae Mitchell, talk a little bit about the tension between the characters in this play in 1947 here in Kansas City. And what's taking place? And maybe how does Mrs. Hopkins play into that, your boarding house owner and character?
Well, there are so many possible lines of tension and for things to go either way in a very happy direction or an aggressive direction. And Mrs. Hopkins likes to keep it going towards the happier, more harmonious balance. But with the amount of people in that house who like have professional ties to one another or new personal ties to one another, it could go any way. So there's tension between the younger ball players and the women and the older ball players, and then you start mixing that up.
You mean competing for the women as ball players, or
just there's a little competition for the younger lady?
Okay,
but just how do we work together as people? How do you, on a stormy night, get trapped in one area with people you don't know or with people you wouldn't normally put yourself in a place with, and just how? How do we get along in New America is really condensed into this house.
Mm-hmm. Did Mrs. Hopkins, for the time, or for an African-American in 1947, make a lot of money?
She I believe, made a lot of money. She's also was married to the first Negro dentist in Northwest Missouri. So his earnings helped her get to where she needed to be. But I believe that she had the know-how and ingenuity to get there. Regardless, it would have taken probably a little longer being a woman and a black woman at that time, but she would have found her way.
In 1947, Dr. Raymond Doswell, head curator at the Negro Leagues Museum, were ball players for the Monarchs making a decent wage, a livable wage?
I say livable. The ball players, black and white, were certainly making more than the average workers. At the same time, Negro League players were mostly playing on the weekends. The Monarchs in particular had to lease their stadium, which was Blue Stadium. Rupert Stadium had a number of names before it became a municipal stadium on Brooklyn. They mostly played at least local games on the weekends, but in between 45 and 47, they also played a lot of games on the road. But our play is set almost in the Negro League offseason, where players like Page and O'Neill and others got together to do these off-season or end-of-the-year barnstorming tours, mostly out west. And this was a way for them to make extra money. You had to be a good ball player to do some of these tours.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, ball players during the week or certainly in the off-season, they worked at the post office. They worked in the car factories, a handful, might have been teachers. They had to, or teamsters, they had to get other jobs in order to make ends meet.
Well, and that was even true in the major leagues as late as the late 1960s. These guys were car salesmen in the off season and did all sorts. Did the chicken, the rubber chicken tour.
And indeed, and we talked about Paige earlier in the show having to earn a pension. The actual Major League Baseball pension program starts in 1947.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to think about that today with the amount of money that professional baseball players make. But that's the beginning of the pension program. And that's been an issue with some of the current living Negro Leaguers who, if they had an opportunity before 1947, and even for those who did get a chance to go over, they didn't get enough service time to earn mm-hmm. a pension.
Ricardo, you're not originally from Kansas City.
No.
So what, as you researched, did your research on Kansas City and on the Monarchs and even probably on Jackie Robinson, what kind of surprised you?
Every time I do research about Kansas City, I get surprised.
And you like it more and more.
I love it. And my love and fascination gets deeper. The first time I wanted to do a play about Kansas City, something based here, I Googled Underground Railroad, Kansas City. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that popped up was a story about Quindaro. Mm-hmm. And when I read about Quindaro, I was fascinated by this river that divided a free state and a slave state. And the stories of people who would cross that river and face all perils to get to freedom. In many ways, in researching Kansas City Swing and recognizing the dividing line that existed and was so specific, that being truced here in Kansas City, it just fascinated me. And remnants of that continue to this day. So to do a play about the history of America at that particular time and set it in Kansas City is to also look for ways it still has meaning today. Uh-huh. Do we still live the legacy of that time? Troost is a very important part of the play, just as Jackie Robinson is.
How about any surprises you learned? You're a baseball fan, right?
Yes, I am. And I played third base in high school. And
yeah.
I love baseball.
Any surprises as you learn more about Jackie Robinson?
Learning about Jackie.
Or did you feel like you had a good sense of his history and his significance?
I feel that I did.
Yeah.
What it did bring to mind was that I didn't know that much about Satchel Paige.
Mm.
And when I learned about Buck O'Neill, I couldn't believe how loved this man was and how much heart he has. He's the soul of this play. And for what he played here, just by being who he was in Kansas City, it inspires me. It inspires me to know more and more about all the other players in the Negro Leagues. These two people, Satchel Paige and Buck O'Neill, are particularly interesting to me.
Janae?
I just wanted to jump in with something about Buck O'Neill, because every time I talk to someone that I just know in passing about this play, they all have a story about Buck O'Neill. And my classmate / castmate, Antonio, plays Buck O'Neill. And every time I get one of these stories, I bring it back to him. And the light that just like shimmers out of everyone when they talk about him is immense.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me wish that I could have met him.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, he left everyone smiling. Yeah, and he was just a genuinely good person. Yeah.
But I that's also something to be when I to be able to work with Bobby Watson, I find that Bobby Watson has a similar spirit that way. Everybody loves Bobby Watson.
He's such a good person and so humble.
Yes.
And just so generous. It's
and he walks in a room and lights the room up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. Janae, how did you prepare for your role? What kind of research did you do?
Well, in the initial readings, I actually played the younger of the two women, so I had to switch gears to what a woman is of that time, or what a woman is in general in context of this script. So it was just indulging the more musical side of things,
mm-hmm.
like finding that love for baseball, but also finding the dancer in her, the jazz lover and singer in her. Just the musicality of the play is really what informed me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a time that was so glamorous, too.
Oh, yeah.
Full of style. Everybody dressed up to mm-hmm. go to the baseball game.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
And a band would lead them to the baseball park.
Yeah.
Yeah. Raymond, I think we're going to take a phone call here, and it's Mark calling from Midtown. And I'm just giving you some forewarning. This is probably a question directed to you. Hi, Mark.
Hi. How you doing?
Go ahead, sir.
Okay, I'm going to try to make this quick, so I won't take up all your time. Was Jackie Robinson dishonorably discharged or honorably discharged from the Army?
He was honorably discharged.
Honorably discharged. Okay, and where is the play being held at Kansas City Swing?
It is at Spencer Theater on the campus of University of Missouri in Kansas City. I don't know the exact address. Is it Rock? It's,
we'll make sure we put that on our website.
Absolutely.
The Central Standard website at kcur.org.
The lady that took my call said 45th and State Line. Does that sound right?
No.
Well, I don't think so.
It's okay, how about Rock Hill?
Yes.
You're getting closer.
That's closer.
Yeah, Cherry Street and Rock Hill.
And I'd like to make one more comment about, you had mentioned that we always dressed up to go to the ball games. There's a reason for that. Most of the people were leaving church.
Mm-hmm.
The ball game was after church. They went to church first, then they went to the ball game. They just kept their clothes on.
Mark, except for those who were at the Mutual Musicians Foundation jamming all night, right?
That too.
Yeah. But I do think we should make a clarification. He was dishonorably discharged originally, and he fought it, and he won. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So finally he was honorably.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, my father told me about the dressing up part. He says, yeah, they was coming from church. They went to church first. Because I was asking, I said, why are they all dressed up?
Yeah.
They was wearing furs and everything. He says, they went straight from church to the ball.
But, you know, that was also a time when people dressed up to do a lot of things.
Right.
To go, to travel.
Right.
To on airplanes, wherever they went, they dressed up.
And they wore their best. They wore their Sunday best. Boy.
Yeah, and they strutted. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Mark.
That's right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for the contribution. That was a good one. 235-2888, 816-235-2888. That reaches the studios. This is Central Standard on KCUR, and we are streaming live at kcur.org. I'm Bill Anderson. I'm with Ricardo Kahn. He co-wrote Kansas City Swing. He's the director. Dr. Raymond Doswell is here. He's the head curator at the Negro Leagues Museum. He was an advisor to Ricardo as he worked on the play. And Janae Mitchell, an actor, is in the play, Kansas City Swing. We'd like to talk to you again, 235-2888. That's 235-2888. I want to go back a little bit more and talk about what was so special beyond being an amazing athlete about Jackie Robinson, Raymond. What prepared him for this? What was it about his personality that made him the man, the African American, who could do this and could endure all the hostility and racial slurs and angry people and still play really good baseball? I mean, no, I'm not, you know.
Well, he certainly understood the gravity of the moment, maybe more so than others who would have perhaps been given the opportunity. He had a very strong mother. He saw her fight through a lot of things as they were growing up. The father of the family abandoned them. They were sharecroppers in Georgia, and they escaped Georgia, basically, when he was very young, and landed in Pasadena, California. Saw how his mother struggled and their family struggled. So he had a good example of strength coming up. And his experiences, watching his brother's experiences, especially in athletics, wanting to have a different life, really strengthened him as he went on. But Robinson also had the reputation of being very quick-tempered, someone who didn't take guff, someone who was not wanting to tolerate segregation and racism.
Okay.
So that, unfortunately, in those times, didn't always serve him well. And that's what led to, of course, the situation in the military, as well as some other things that he had to encounter. So when the opportunity came for him to join the Brooklyn Dodgers in particular, the famous story is that Branch Rickey, the general manager of the Dodgers, implored him that, look, if this is going to work, you've got to control your temper. You've got to think about it in these terms, because even if you're justified in fighting back, the newspapers are not going to say that you were provoked. They're going to say you couldn't handle it, that you lashed out. And so you've got to really hold back and be proud, you know, be proud of what happened, but just hold back and don't react. But after a little while, you can go for it. Now, here's a former football player, mm-hmm. a man who is very proud black man, understood the gravity of the moment, and accepted the challenge, and he did. And then, but after a couple of years, he fought back and fought back ferociously.
Now, we all know that Branch Rickey was the president of the Brooklyn Dodgers, the GM of the Brooklyn Dodgers. He's the one who really recruited Jackie Robinson. What do you think? And Ricardo, I want you to jump in here too. And Janae, if you feel so inclined, but I know you don't like baseball.
It's not that I don't like it. I'm just unfamiliar. I'm from a football state.
But what was it that you know, what were those first few minutes like? Or I think they spent 3 hours together the first time they met Branch Rickey and Jackie Robinson. What do you suppose took place there?
Well, it's documented as a legendary story of the fact. Well, one, Rickey had looked through the Negro Leagues trying to find, sent out his scouts to try to find the best potential black players. And obviously, Satchel Paige's and Buck O'Neill's were around. But for various reasons, they didn't think that they would be the best candidates. Robinson had all the other experience in integrated sports. So when they got a chance to meet, there's a famous story that Rickey, once he decided on Robinson, challenged Robinson and said, look, when I need you to hold back your temper, he challenged him. And Rickey is famous for a lot of platitudes and being a very religious man. So he's cursing, he's saying all these things to try to provoke Robinson to see what he's going to do. And Robinson asks, do you want a player who doesn't have the guts enough to fight back? I've messed that up. Do you want a player who has the guts to fight back? And says, no, I want a player who has the guts not to fight back.
Yeah.
And so that was the challenge that they embarked on. And clearly, Rickey had also had other experiences with African-American players. There's another famous story about one when he was in college having to deal with racism and segregation. So Robinson certainly needed to understand that this was bigger than him. And some would say that all of that weighed on him. He died as a young man, you know, having gone through that. But he did have a very successful, especially the first 3 to 4 years of his baseball career. He was really the catalyst of the Brooklyn Dodgers when he played for them.
Yeah. And I think it's important to note that he was, to know that he is part of a much bigger picture. I mean, look, he was not the first person in history to be tested. He was a beneficiary of those who came before him. Bessie Coleman was the first woman to have an international pilot's license, and she was tested. Mahatma Gandhi and his principles, he was tested. Paul Robeson was tested. The Tuskegee Airmen, Benjamin O. Davis, who went through West Point, and for 4 years no one spoke to him at all. These were all tested people in history, representing so many more. But Jackie Robinson, being a person as intelligent as he was, I'm sure knew his history and understood that he was but a speck in the bigger picture.
And just to add, tested and tested on a stage where everyone's watching.
Everyone's watching.
In the arena.
Yeah, that's amazing pressure. Let's. I think we're going to be tested on our history here. Lee's on the air with us. Hi, Lee.
Hi. Yes, I wanted to tell you about a video that Kansas City Public Television put together. Oh, it's a couple of years back, and they've had it on TV a few times. But it's called Ain't Seen Nothing Like It Since. And it's the story of the Kansas City Monarchs, and also within the context of background and history of the Negro Leagues baseball. And it has some really great footage, and a lot of it's got some Buck O'Neill was alive when they put this together, and so there's some great interviews with him. And it talks about Jackie Robinson and a number of different things. I have it as a VHS tape. I don't know if they have it on DVD or not, but I know you can buy it from Kansas City Public Television through their website. I think it's also in the gift shop over at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, no. I'm very familiar with the video. Danny Cox is another great Kansas City musician as well. But unfortunately, I have talked to those folks over at the TV station, and they are working perhaps to get it on DVD. But no, it's unfortunately not available. But it is a great resource for understanding the local history, and it shows some great images of the region, of the old ballpark as well. So I do recommend it as well.
Quickly, did Branch Rickey and Jackie Robinson always, did they, you know, post-baseball careers, did they enjoy a good relationship? Did they stay in contact?
Rickey was forced out of his leadership of the Dodgers at one point through, I guess, the business struggles of the time. And so Robinson was always very respectful of Branch, and they didn't always get along. It was it was business most of the time, but he saw Ricky as one of his greatest advocates and greatest friends. And yes, they were they remained respectful friends for many years afterwards.
What I find kind of interesting, Ricardo, is the fact that yes, Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier, but if you were to go to any of those games back then, you wouldn't see many people of color in the stands. Now was that were they excluded because of price, or were they excluded because we were still determined to remain segregated?
You're speaking about in the major leagues?
In the major leagues, I apologize. Yeah.
Well, I think that they probably had different sections based on the state you were in.
Okay.
Certainly in the Northeast, it was different than in the South. But segregation was thankfully toppled shortly after that because of people like Jackie Robinson and Branch Rickey and people who came before.
Now, it is important to clarify that black fans, they like the Yankees, they like the Red Sox, but they had opportunities to see the Negro Leagues. And when Robinson came, he was a sensation in places like Pittsburgh and Chicago in particular. There were a number of black fans that would came out. And in Brooklyn, in Brooklyn in particular, I mean, Branch Rickey noted that everyone's money's not black and white, it's green.
Yeah,
so
<that's>
he certainly looked for the fans. And so Robinson, and whenever a team got a black player, it was immediately something that the community rallied behind.
You know what's interesting is that when I was growing up, a lot of times the soap operas back then were not integrated. And a lot of people I knew, when I was in school, they were going to try out for the soap operas and being told, no, America's not ready for that yet. But you know what it took? People recognizing that black people buy soap as well. When it really comes down to it, the dollar and the ability to demonstrate that there's buying power can be a main factor for toppling the barriers that exist in the name of race. But if you really look at it, it makes so much sense to recognize that we all are in this America together.
Janae Mitchell, quickly,
yes.
What do you want me to take away? What do you want us to take away from Kansas City Swing the Play?
Oh, God, I just want you to take away a good time and the sacrifice and the love these people had for the game and the country and for each other.
Janae Mitchell, thanks for appearing on our show today.
Thank you.
And Raymond, always nice to see you, sir.
Thank you.
And Ricardo, nice to have you in the studio
also. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Kansas City Swing is being performed by UMKC Theater starting tomorrow, running through the 28th of April. And we're going to put that Bobby Watson clip on our website because it's really powerful. It's really interesting. And we just ran out of time. I'm sorry. Thanks for joining us, everyone. You can subscribe to our podcast, hear this conversation again, and access any of our previous shows from the Central Standard page of KCUR.org. We'd like to thank Claire McInerney, Laura Spencer, Julie Deniche, and Suzanne Hogan, as well as our producer, Matthew Long Middleton. Up to Date is next.